A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel's in the U.S. Picks up a Phoenix Lantern. Solid brand, rechargeable, exactly the thing you want when the power cuts out in Jerusalem. Opens the box, and there's a pink mark on it. Could be glow paint, could be lipstick. Definitely shouldn't be there on a new product. Amazon refunds it, tells him to just keep the thing. And Daniel's question is, how does this actually happen? He's not asking as a one-off complaint. He's asking about the structure. Amazon is misunderstood as a vendor when it's really a marketplace. Was this a returned item that was never inspected? And what does quality control even mean when a marketplace scales beyond the ability of any organization to inspect everything?
The pink mark is the perfect entry point because it's almost certainly not a factory defect. Phoenix is a legitimate, high-quality flashlight manufacturer out of China. They have real QC at the factory level. Their reputation depends on it. A visible pink smudge on the housing isn't something that slips past a production line that checks for beam pattern consistency and waterproofing.
So it entered after the factory.
Had to. And that means it entered somewhere in Amazon's fulfillment network. So the question isn't really about Phoenix at all. It's about what happens to a product once a third-party seller sends it to an Amazon warehouse and Amazon takes over.
That's the distinction Daniel's poking at. Amazon presents itself as a store. The branding, the packaging, the return policy, all say you bought this from Amazon. But the actual transaction is between you and some seller you've never heard of, and Amazon is the logistics platform in the middle.
And that distinction is where the pink mark lives. Let's start with the two paths a product can take. There's FBM. Fulfilled by merchant, where the seller stores, packs, and ships the item themselves. Amazon is just the listing. Then there's FBA, fulfilled by Amazon, where the seller ships their inventory to Amazon's warehouses, and Amazon handles everything from storage to picking to packing to returns. Most people buying on Amazon don't know which path their item took, and Amazon doesn't exactly highlight it. For something like a Phoenix Lantern, it's almost certainly FBA. The seller sends a batch to an Amazon fulfillment center. You click buy, Amazon picks one, packs it, ships it, so far so good. But now let's say the person who got that lantern before Daniel returns it.
And here we go.
The return arrives at an Amazon Returns center. An employee, a grader, opens the box, looks at the item, and assigns it a condition grade. Amazon has four tiers, like new, very good, good, and acceptable. If it's too damaged, it goes to unfulfillable, liquidation, donation, or destruction.
How long does the grader get with each item?
This is where it gets uncomfortable. Amazon's internal guidelines for the grade and resell program expect graders to process items in under 30 seconds. Some facilities, the target is closer to 20. You're standing at a conveyor belt with a tablet. Box opens, glance at the item, tap a grade, next box.
30 seconds. So you're not inspecting, you're glancing.
You're glancing. And for a lantern, the grader is looking for obvious damage. Is the housing cracked? Is the lens smashed? Does it turn on? They're almost certainly not looking for a pink smudge on the side. If the box looks okay and the item isn't visibly destroyed, it gets graded, like new, and goes back into inventory. Then it sits in a bin next to new lanterns, and when Daniel orders one, the picker grabs whichever unit is closest.
And this isn't some edge case. This is the designed process.
Amazon processes something on the order of 1.6 million packages per day in the U.S. alone. Even if only a fraction of a percent of returns get misgraded, that's thousands of items per day going back into inventory with defects that a 30-second glance didn't catch.
The economics of it are brutal. Daniel's lantern was what, $30? A 5-minute inspection. Actually opening the box, checking the item, testing it, wiping it down, costs more in labor than the profit margin on reselling it. Cheap items get the glance. Expensive electronics might get a little more attention, but even then, not much.
There was a Wall Street Journal investigation back in 2021 that found Amazon was destroying millions of unsold or returned items, sending them to landfills or incinerators. Not because the items were defective, but because the cost of inspecting, grading, and relisting them exceeded what they could be sold for. A perfectly good lantern returned because someone changed their mind might cost more to process than to trash.
Which is its own kind of madness, but it tells you how thin the margins are on returns processing.
And there's another layer. Amazon sometimes commingles inventory. Multiple sellers can list the same product under the same ASIN. If those sellers all opt into commingled inventory, Amazon doesn't keep their units separate. Seller A sends in 100 genuine Phoenix lanterns. Seller B sends in 100 genuine Phoenix lanterns. Amazon dumps all 200 into the same bin. When a customer orders from seller A, the picker grabs any unit from that bin, which might have come from seller B.
And if seller B had a customer return a lantern with a pink mark, and that return got graded, like new and tossed back into the commingled bin.
Then seller A ships a defective unit they never touched, and their seller rating takes the hit. The customer blames Amazon, Amazon blames the seller blames the factory never saw the item after it left Shenzhen. Responsibility diffuses completely.
So the pink mark is a tiny physical trace of a system where nobody actually owns the problem.
And that's the thing Daniel's really asking about. It's not, why did my lantern have a mark on it? It's what kind of system produces this as a normal, expected outcome. Because it's normal. The system is working exactly as designed. The design just doesn't prioritize what the customer assumes it prioritizes. The customer assumes they're buying from a store that's inspected the merchandise. What they're actually getting is a logistics platform optimized for speed and cost, and inspection is a cost center. Every second spent inspecting a return is a second not spent processing the next return. The incentives point toward less inspection, not more.
Let's talk about the seller side. On a marketplace like Amazon, sellers compete primarily on price and shipping speed. The algorithms favor the lowest price and the fastest delivery. If you're a seller who invests in robust QC, your costs go up, your price goes up, and you lose the buy box to someone who doesn't do any of that.
It's a race to the bottom, and QC is one of the first things to go. The seller who cuts corners on inspection can offer the lantern for $2 less, and Amazon's algorithm rewards them with more sales. The seller who inspects carefully gets punished.
And for a brand like Phoenix, this is a real problem. Phoenix has decent factory QC. That's why Daniel wanted one. But once their products enter Amazon's fulfillment network, Phoenix loses control entirely. A returned Phoenix lantern can be regraded and resold as new without Phoenix ever knowing. The brand absorbs the reputational damage from a defect they didn't create and couldn't prevent.
The information asymmetry is the core of it. The customer trusts the Amazon brand, the logo on the box, the tape, the return policy. They reasonably conclude they bought from Amazon. But when something goes wrong, Amazon's position is essentially, we didn't sell you this, we just handled the logistics. Take it up with the seller.
Except the customer can't take it up with the seller in any meaningful way. The seller is often a company the customer has never heard of, with a name like Bright Deals or Lumina Trading. The refund comes from Amazon. The return label comes from Amazon. The customer service chat is with Amazon. The seller is a ghost.
Compare this to eBay. On eBay, the model is transparent. You're buying from a seller. eBay never touches the inventory. You know you're taking a risk on a third party, and the feedback system is designed around that assumption. Amazon blurs the line deliberately. The whole experience is designed to feel like you're buying from a single trusted retailer. And for most transactions, that trust is warranted. The item arrives, it's fine, you never think about it again. But when it fails in ways that reveal the structure underneath.
The pink mark is the structure underneath.
It is. And the scale makes it intractable. Amazon can't inspect everything. No organization can inspect everything at this volume. The question isn't whether Amazon should inspect more. It's whether the marketplace model itself creates expectations that the fulfillment infrastructure can't meet.
There's a feedback loop here too. Amazon's solution to quality problems is to make returns extremely easy. You get a lantern with a pink mark, you click a button, you get a refund, you don't even have to send it back. That's great customer service on the surface. But every return processed this way creates another item that has to be graded and potentially resold. The easier returns get, the more returns there are. The more returns, the more items flow through the grading system. The more items flow through, the more grading errors occur. The more grading errors, the more defective items reach customers, who then return them. It's a defect amplifier.
A defect amplifier. That's exactly what it is. The returns policy that solves the customer's immediate problem is also the mechanism that generates more problems downstream.
So where does that leave us? Amazon's not going to stop being a marketplace. The volume's not going to shrink. The economics of inspection aren't going to suddenly flip. Is the answer just, this is how it works, live with it?
I think there's a more interesting question underneath. The answer for any individual customer is already built into the system. Easy returns, refunds, keep the item. Amazon has priced that in. The deeper question is about trust and responsibility in a system where nobody is responsible. In a traditional retail model, the store buys inventory, inspects it, stocks it, sells it. If there's a defect, the store is responsible. One entity, one chain of custody, one point of accountability. In Amazon's model, the chain of custody is split. The seller owns the inventory until it reaches Amazon. Amazon owns the storage and fulfillment. The returns grader is an Amazon employee, but their incentive is speed, not accuracy. The seller's reputation depends on product quality, but they can't control what happens in Amazon's warehouse. The brand depends on QC, but they can't control the returns process. Every link in the chain has an incentive to point at the next link.
And the customer is at the end of the chain holding a lantern with lipstick on it.
Right. And the refund makes the customer whole in a narrow transactional sense, but it doesn't address the structural problem. The structural problem is that the marketplace has externalized QC costs to everyone and no one simultaneously.
There's something almost elegant about it from a systems perspective. Amazon has built a machine where the cost of failure, the refund, the return shipping, the disposal, is cheaper than the cost of prevention. As long as that equation holds, the pink marks will keep appearing.
And that equation holds because customers keep buying. The convenience, the price, the selection, they outweigh the occasional defective item. Amazon knows this. They've done the math. The cost of losing a customer over a pink mark is lower than the cost of adding 30 seconds to every returns inspection.
I want to loop back to Phoenix specifically, because Daniel mentioned he's always wanted to own something from them. This is a brand that's invested in quality. Daniel chose Phoenix deliberately. He wasn't buying a no-name knockoff, and he still got a marked-up unit. That says something about the limits of brand quality control in a marketplace model.
It says that brand QC only protects you up to the point where the product enters the marketplace's logistics network. After that, the brand is along for the ride. Phoenix can inspect every unit at the factory, use tamper-evident packaging, serialize every product. None of that matters if Amazon opens the box during returns processing, glances at it, and puts it back on the shelf as new.
And for the customer, the brand takes the hit. Daniel didn't say Amazon sent me a defective lantern. He said I bought a Phoenix lantern, and it had a mark on it. The brand's reputation absorbs the failure, even though the brand had nothing to do with it.
This is a known problem in marketplace economics, brand risk externalization. The marketplace captures the value of the brand's reputation. Customers trust Phoenix, so they buy Phoenix on Amazon. But the marketplace doesn't bear the cost when that reputation is damaged by fulfillment failures. Phoenix bears it. And Phoenix has almost no recourse. They can't demand that Amazon inspect returns more carefully. They can't pull their products from Amazon without losing a massive sales channel. They're stuck.
So the marketplace has leverage over the brand. The brand has no leverage over the marketplace. And the customer's trust is the collateral.
That's the structure. And it's not unique to Amazon. Any platform that intermediates between buyers and sellers creates this dynamic. But Amazon's scale makes it particularly acute. When you're processing over a billion packages a year, even a tiny error rate produces an enormous number of failures in absolute terms.
A 0.1% defect rate on a billion packages is a million defective items.
A million items. And that's assuming a defect rate that would be considered world-class in any other logistics operation. The actual rate is probably higher because the returns grading process is designed for throughput, not accuracy.
So Daniel's pink mark is a 1-in-a-million event that happens a million times a year.
Each one of those million events is a small erosion of trust. Most customers shrug it off. They get the refund, they keep the item, they move on. But cumulatively, it changes how people think about the marketplace. They start to wonder, is this thing I'm buying actually new? Has someone else opened this box? Should I be wiping down everything I order?
There's a hygiene dimension to this that I think is under-discussed. Daniel mentioned the mark could have been lipstick or glow paint. Either way, it's a biological residue from a previous human. That's not just a cosmetic defect. It's a signal that the product has been in someone else's hands, in someone else's home, possibly used. The ick factor is real.
And it's not something the grading system is designed to catch. A grader looking for functional damage, cracks, dents, missing parts, isn't looking for a smudge. They're not cleaning the item. The grading guidelines don't say, wipe down the product and check for biological residue. They say, assess cosmetic condition. A pink mark might not even register as a defect.
If it's not on the checklist, it doesn't exist.
And the checklist is designed for speed. 20 seconds. Open, glance, grade, next. You're not going to notice a faint pink smudge in 20 seconds unless it's directly in your field of view and the lighting is good and you're paying attention. And after hour 6 of a 10-hour shift, you're not paying that kind of attention.
Let me ask you something. You were a pediatrician. You spent a career in a profession where inspection and diagnosis are everything. If someone had told you that you had 30 seconds per patient, what would you have said?
I'd have said that's not medicine, that's triage. And triage is for emergencies. It's not a sustainable model for routine care. But that's exactly what Amazon's returns grading is. It's triage. The goal isn't to accurately assess every item. The goal is to sort items into broad categories fast enough to keep the conveyor belt moving. Accuracy is secondary.
And triage works for its intended purpose. You catch the catastrophic failures, the obviously broken items. But it misses everything subtle. The pink mark is subtle. It's exactly the kind of thing triage is designed to miss.
And the system accepts that miss rate because the alternative, slowing down, inspecting thoroughly, would cost more than the miss rate costs. The refunds, the customer service contacts, the brand damage, all of that's cheaper than adding labor to the returns process.
So we've traced the pink mark from Daniel's apartment in Jerusalem back through the return center, the grading station, the commingled inventory bin, the original return, and we've ended up at an economic equation that says it's cheaper to ship defective items than to prevent them. That's the system.
That's the system. And I think that's what Daniel was really asking. Not, how did this happen to me, but what kind of machine produces this outcome? The answer is, a machine optimized for throughput, not quality. A machine where responsibility is distributed across so many parties that it effectively belongs to none of them. A machine where the customer's trust is assumed to be infinite and the cost of eroding, it's assumed to be zero.
The trust isn't infinite, though. It's just slow to deplete. Each pink mark takes a little bit. Eventually, people start treating Amazon like a marketplace instead of a store. They inspect their own items more carefully. They're more skeptical of new. Condition, they factor in the probability of defects. The trust premium erodes.
And when that happens, the marketplace model gets less efficient. If customers start assuming that new might mean used but glanced at for 20 seconds, they'll demand lower prices to compensate for the risk. Sellers will have to cut prices further. Margins get thinner. QC gets worse. It's a spiral.
The pink mark is a leading indicator of marketplace entropy.
Laugh if you want, but it's not wrong. The pink mark is a tiny crack in the foundation of trust that the entire marketplace is built on. Most cracks don't matter. Enough of them, and you've got a structural problem.
So what does the fix look like? Is there a fix?
There are partial fixes. Computer vision on returns lines. AI inspection systems that can scan items in milliseconds and flag anomalies that human graders miss. Amazon is investing in this, but the fundamental economics don't change. Inspection costs money. Speed saves money. As long as those two things are in tension, the system will optimize towards speed.
The AI inspection would need to be good enough to catch a pink smudge on a black lantern housing in variable lighting conditions, moving on a conveyor belt among millions of other items. That's a hard computer vision problem.
It's a very hard problem, And even if you solve it, you've just added a technology cost to a process that was already optimized to be as cheap as possible. The economic incentive still points towards skipping inspection.
We're back to the structural answer. This is how it works, and the pink marks are priced in.
They're priced in. The question is whether customers are okay with that price, and whether brands like Phoenix can absorb the reputational cost of a system they can't control.
I keep coming back to something Daniel said, that he's always wanted a Phoenix, that this was a deliberate choice, a quality brand, and what he got was a product that carried someone else's use. There's something almost poetic about that. You reach for quality in a system that can't guarantee it, and the system hands you back someone's returned item with a trace of them still on it.
The previous owner is still on the product. Literally.
Literally. And that's the marketplace in a single image. The previous owner is always still on the product. You just don't usually see the evidence.
Most of the time, the grading system is good enough to erase the evidence. The box is retaped, the item is wiped down, the accessories are repacked. The illusion of newness is maintained. Daniel's lantern is interesting precisely because the illusion broke. The pink mark survived the process. It's a visible artifact of the system's failure.
It's such a small thing. A pink smudge. It's almost absurd that we've spent this long talking about it. But that's the point. The small thing is the window.
The small thing is always the window. In medicine, you learn to pay attention to the thing the patient mentions in passing, the symptom they almost didn't bring up because it seemed too minor. That's often where the diagnosis lives.
The pink mark has the symptom the patient almost didn't mention.
The diagnosis is, the system is healthy, functioning normally, producing expected outcomes. The problem isn't a malfunction. The problem is that the expected outcomes include a certain number of pink marks, and the system is designed to absorb that cost rather than eliminate it.
Which brings us back to Daniel's core question. How do things like this actually end up happening? The answer is, they happen because the system is built to let them happen. The pink mark isn't a bug. It's a feature, an acceptable loss in a machine that prioritizes speed and cost above all else.
20 seconds is generous.
What?
The warehouse I worked at, we had 12. 12 seconds per item. Summer of 94, third-party logistics warehouse in Allentown, Pennsylvania. Handled returns for Circuit City and a couple of other electronics retailers that aren't around anymore. My job title was Returns Processing Associate. What I actually did was stand at a conveyor belt with a clipboard and a barcode scanner and decide, in about the time it takes you to sneeze, whether a return VCR was sellable.
12 seconds.
The belt didn't stop. If you hesitated, the item went past you and the supervisor wrote your name down. We processed about 1,200 returns per shift. 10-hour shift. You do the math. You don't inspect anything. You look for the obvious. Is the box crushed? Is there a cord hanging out? Does it rattle when you shake it? No, no, no. Like new. Next.
If there was a pink mark on a black VCR,
wouldn't have seen it. The lighting was terrible. The bell was gray. You're not looking for smudges. You're looking for reasons to reject. If you don't see a reason to reject, it goes back to inventory. The default assumption is sellable.
The default assumption is sellable.
That's the whole job. Your job isn't to find defects. Your job is to keep the line moving. The supervisor told us, first day, you aren't quality control. Quality control happened at the factory. You're sorting. If it's not obviously broken, it's fine.
The grading system is designed to pass items through, not to catch problems.
Designed, measured, and compensated that way. We were graded on throughput, items per hour. Accuracy was never measured. Nobody ever came back and said, hey, you graded this wrong and a customer complained. That feedback loop didn't exist. The only feedback was, you processed 1,100 items yesterday. The target is 1,200. Pick it up.
You were 18, 19 years old?
19. Summer job? Paid $7.25 an hour. I didn't care about accuracy. I cared about not getting yelled at. So I hit the target.
Did you ever grade something as like new that you knew wasn't?
All the time. Once had a returned laptop, $1,500 machine, top of the line for 94, and the screen was cracked. Visible crack, corner to corner. I flagged it as damaged. Supervisor came over, looked at it, changed the grade to like new. Told me the customer who returned it was a high value account and the system was set up to keep them happy. The cost of eating the return was less than the cost of arguing with the customer.
The defective item went back into inventory.
went back into inventory, shipped to the next customer, who presumably returned it again. And maybe the third time it came back, someone finally wrote it off. Or maybe not. I don't know. I just know I put a cracked laptop back on the shelf because the system told me to.
That was 30 years ago, at a third-party warehouse, for a retailer that doesn't exist anymore. The same dynamics, the same incentives, the same outcome.
Nothing's changed except the volume. We were doing 1,200 items a shift. Amazon's doing millions a day. The economics are exactly the same. Inspection costs money. Speed makes money. You pick speed.
The cracked laptop is the pink mark.
The cracked laptop is the pink mark. The only difference is the laptop was a $1,500 item and the lantern was $30. The principle is identical. The system isn't designed to catch defects. It's designed to move product. If catching defects were the priority, you'd staff differently, you'd measure differently, you'd light the warehouse differently. None of that happens because none of that's the point.
The point is throughput.
The point is throughput. Always was. I was there for 3 months. By the end of the summer, I could grade a returned stereo receiver in about 8 seconds. Open box, glance at faceplate, check for accessories, scan, next. I was very good at my job. My job wasn't quality control.
That job still exists, in essentially the same form, in every return center in the country.
With a tablet instead of a clipboard. The tablet just makes it faster to record the grade. Doesn't change the looking.
The pink mark survives because nobody was ever supposed to look for it.
Nobody was paid to look for it. If you want to find pink marks, you have to pay someone to find pink marks. Nobody wants to pay for that. So, the pink marks ship.
The system is working exactly as designed. And that's the problem. Where does that leave us?
It leaves us with an open question about responsibility. If Amazon can't inspect everything, and at this scale, no organization can, and sellers can't control what happens after their inventory enters Amazon's network, and brands like Phoenix have no visibility into the returns process, who's actually responsible for the quality of what arrives at the customer's door?
The answer right now is the customer. The customer is the final inspector. The customer opens the box, finds the pink mark, and initiates the return. The quality control function has been outsourced to the person paying for the product.
That works, in a narrow sense, as long as returns are easy and refunds are fast. But it's a strange kind of quality system where the end user is the one doing the inspection.
There's a future question here, too. AI-powered inspection systems are getting better. Computer vision on returns lines could theoretically catch things like pink marks, surface defects, signs of previous use. But does that actually change the economics? Or does the incentive to skip inspection always win? Because the cost of inspection will always be higher than the cost of the occasional refund.
I think the incentive structure is the deeper problem. Even if you had perfect inspection technology that cost nothing to run, you'd still have the commingling issue, the seller accountability gap, the brand risk externalization. The technology might catch more pink marks, but it wouldn't fix the fact that responsibility is distributed across too many parties for anyone to own it.
The pink mark on Daniel's lantern is a tiny, almost absurd example. A smudge on a $30 light. But it's a window into how trust works and breaks in a system built on scale. The trust isn't maintained by inspection. It's maintained by refunds. And refunds are cheaper than inspection. As long as that's true, the pink marks keep coming.
If you take one thing from this, it's that the defect isn't a failure of the system. It's a product of the system. The system is calibrated to produce a certain rate of defects because eliminating them would cost more than absorbing them. The pink mark isn't a bug. It's the price of scale.
The price is paid in small erosions of trust, one smudge at a time.
Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop, who has apparently been waiting 30 years to tell that story.
This has been My Weird Prompts. You can find every episode at myweirdprompts.com. If you've got a defective product story or a pink mark of your own, email the show at show@myweirdprompts.com.
We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore. A thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.